morning. What's going on? There's one major difference between the pieces that appear before the lineage and the pieces that appear after the lineage.
Moshe didn't say about Bnei Israel that they listened to him afterwards.
That is one point. I'm asking for the broader point. You're correct in what you just said. How all the pieces different? You with me? You are 100% correct about the difference between the first bet and the second bet. Now I'm asking, how are all the pieces different? The common denominator of the difference between all the pieces is that in the first part of Perek Vav, the Bnei Yisrael are part of whom, really central, Hashem is addressing. Look at the beginning of Perek Vav. Moshe is told to go and tell something to who? First four psukim, God talks about his mission, and then Pasuk Vav Lachain. What do you need to do, Moshe? Tell the Bnei Yisrael, I am Hashem, I'm taking you out, I'm ready, I'm here, blah, blah, blah. Moshe goes, it doesn't work. In the next part, Yud Yud Alf and Yud Bet, Hashem sends Moshe to Paro as well, and Moshe says, the Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to me, why would Paro? The summary of the Shlichut in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, to go to who? Pasuk Yud Gimel, to go to who? Bnei Yisrael and Paro. All that is true up to Pasuk Yud Gimel. From Pasuk Vav and on, there's no mention of Bnei Yisrael. Who is Moshe sent to? Chav Vav, Chav Zayin, Paro. And you see it very sharply in Chav Chet, Chav Chet, Chav Tet and Lamed, when now Moshe responds to Hashem sending him to Paro, not by Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to me, why should Paro? But Pasuk Lamed, Moshe says in front of Hashem, Hein ani aral svatayim, ve'ech yishma elai Paro. The aral svatayim factor was mentioned beforehand in Pasuk Yud Bet as a secondary factor. What was the main factor Moshe mentioned? Bnei Yisrael didn't listen, why should Paro? Now that's not mentioned anymore. Why is it not mentioned anymore? Bnei Yisrael off the table. And that's why, in Perek Zayin and on, and really throughout Parshat Vayera, Moshe is sent only to speak to who? Paro. Bnei Yisrael are forgotten. The obvious question is, what does this mean? Those are the facts. Okay, those are the data. The question is, what's going on here? I think this continues a very important theme, which has to do with what we spoke about when we last had this year in Parshat Shemot, and what we're going to speak about in this week's Parshat Bo. Can't go through all of Parshat Day, we have to do a little Parshat Bo too, and there's a lot to do in Parshat Bo. We're not even able to get all of Parshat Bo in. But in any case, Moshe initially at the burning bush, and we went through this in Parshat Shemot, was sent to two audiences. I just want to remember, I'll point out the psukim again. Initially, the first shlichut God gives Moshe is to go and speak to who? That's the second. But the first one is to speak to Paro. If you look in Perek Gimel, Hashem tells Moshe, I'm here to save the Jews, and I've heard enough, and I'm going to get involved. And therefore, Pasuk Yud, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud, V'yata l'cho v'yeshlachacha el Paro, v'otzeh et ami v'nei Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim. Moshe says, who am I going to go to Paro? And God says, I'll be with you. Moshe says, but what about when I go to Bnei Yisrael? They'll say, who are you? Who am I? Who sent you, right? Once Moshe raises the issue of Bnei Yisrael, then Perek Gimel Pasuk Tet Vav, Hashvayomer Od Elokim El Moshe. God now speaks again and says, this is what I want you to tell the Bnei Yisrael. Ko Tomar El Bnei Yisrael Hashem Elokei Avotechem Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchok, etc. The reason he was sent to Bnei Yisrael is because in order for Bnei Yisrael to leave Egypt, they're going to have to take a stance and show faith and stand with Moshe and go to Paro. Lech v'yasafta zeknei Yisrael. And initially they did. And had they stood firm, what would have happened? When Paro said no, as we saw when we learned Parshat Shmo, what would have happened? What did Hashem tell Moshe on the way back to Mitzrayim? He was to tell Paro when Paro refused to let them go. In fact, Hashem told Moshe that Paro will refuse to let them go because I want to do the following. What's the following? Makas Bechoros, right? You're going to tell Paro the Jews are my firstborn? Just to remember what we did 2 weeks ago. Perek Dalet, the Mafia Italian, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chaf Beis. You're going to tell Paro, Ko Ama Hashem, B'ni Bechor Yisrael, let my children go, and if not, Ine Anuchi Oreged Bincha Bechorecha. And why did that not happen right away? Makas Bechoros? And the Jews backed down. The Jews didn't have faith. So now Hashem says, okay, we're going to get strong. But there's one last attempt to get the plan to work right. And what does it mean to get the plan to work right? which depends upon having B'nai Yisrael show faith. So before we're going to drop them from the scene and from the play, go back to B'nai Yisrael and let me tell them the Arba of Chamesh Lashonos of Geula and try and inspire them and let them know I'll be with them and Yud Kei Vav Kei, past, present, future, and you know, you have to have patience and it's going to work out. Let me try and get B'nai Yisrael on board. But it didn't work. And it's important for us to see that that not working undermined the rest of the picture too, as Moshe says. Hein B'nai Yisrael lo shemu elai. How can the Goyim be convinced to do anything for the Jewish people if they don't take a stance? How can the Goyim be cajoled into agreeing to a state of Israel if the Jews don't want the state of Israel? The Jews aren't moving and building and trying and fighting. So what needs to happen when it fails? We need to start over, right? We're going to start a new mission. Not the mission to get B'nai Israel to stand, but the mission to beat up Paro. How do we show here in Parshat Vayera that we're starting something new? How does the Torah show we're starting something new? It starts a new story. It reintroduces Moshe and Aaron and tells you, oh, this is Moshe and Aaron, the one speaking to Paro. Oh, okay. Meaning, by mentioning part of it without the rest of it, we're redefining it. This is Moshe and Aaron who are sent to Paro. And when you look through Vayera, the Jews are only mentioned in the backdrop as not suffering. The Makkah didn't hit them. Okay, they are no longer being addressed. There's nothing expected from them. And the question is, how does this story come around? And that's, of course, Parshat Bo. Let me begin with the question that I think will help you see it. Most people understand that the reason God brought the Makot is, most people understand, what's Pashup Shah when you read the Torah? What does the Torah say the purpose of the Makot is? Sorry? To mess with Egypt. Well, that's actually the beginning of Parshat Bo, which is mentioned once, but we'll get to. But what does it say in Parshat Vayera? It says it a number of times. I'm going to do these things.
Hashem will show that he strike Egypt.
Who? What will show what?
That he's the one doing it.
V'yadu'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. It says many, many times in Parshat Vayera. V'yadu, I know it was last week, we forgot about it. V'yadu'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. And the Egyptians will know that I'm God, and they're going to see, and they're going to see. Now, the obvious question is, who cares what the Egyptians think? You're going to drown them in the Yamsuf anyway, right? And in fact, I'll ask a stronger kasha. You want to hear a stronger kasha? Everyone asks, how could God take away the Bechir Chafshis from Paro? I have a different question. Why does he need to? After the fifth Makkah, first it says Paro strengthened his heart. Paro was being stubborn. Eventually it starts saying that Hashem strengthened his heart. Why does he need to do that? Power's ready to let him go. Good kasha, no? You've done miracles already. Power's ready to let him go, so let him go. Why does Hashem need to strengthen his heart? It's good kasha, no? It's good kasha, no? I think the answer comes in the beginning of Parshat. We know the answer already. But let me show you where the Torah gives it to you. The beginning of Parshat Bo. The beginning of Parshat Bo is very strange. Because it begins in the middle of the Makos. Now, I would have thunk that you should have all the makas in one parsha. No, you know what I'm saying? It's one topic, it's one story, right? And if you're already going to divide them up for whatever reason, it's too long, it's too much, where would I draw the line?
5 and 5.
Okay, fair. But you should know textually, everyone knows from the Haggadah night, Seder night, we divide them into three groups, right? Tzach, Adash, Be'achav, right? Okay, that's just Chazal. We believe in Chazal, we went to TABC. Happy Carson, you know, happy. Chazal is happy Carson, but you should know it has textual basis. Ah, that's textual basis.
We love textual.
We love textual basis. In fact, if you look at pages 40, 41, if you look at pages, well, 40, by the way, 40 happens to be a useful sheet. Separate point, going back to what we were talking about before, because it contrasts the different shlichiot of Moshe being initially to Hashem and the B'nai Yisrael versus later, the different Lashonos. Maybe we'll stop here for a second. Just to go over, Hashem initially says in Perek Gimel, we'll get back to the Makot in a moment. In Perek Gimel, Hashem identifies himself as a Lekei, Avicha, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and he promises, I'm coming down, Lahatzil, Ulahalos, and Lahotzi, right? The initial promises. And what does Moshe say? And then he says in Perek Gimel, he sends him to B'nai Yisrael again. Okay, Avosechem, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Aletchem. Okay, in the end of Parshat Shemot, Moshe complains that here I've gone, but v'itzal lo itzalta. You haven't done the Hatzalah that you promised. This is the backdrop, of course, to the reformulation, Shemot Perek Vav in Parshat Veira, again, obviously Yaakov. The promise is made before of Hotza'ah and Hatzalah, which didn't happen. But the Chiddush being V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, V'heveti, the relationship with the Jewish people, which he's trying to inspire them through. I didn't make this clear, like I said before. Okay. But moving on to pages 41, 42, and 43, you have here, I think this is pretty cool, you can decide for yourself. The first one of each round of three, 147, you see on page 41. And then the second one, 258. And then on page 43, the third one, 369. Everyone understands what's going on here? How this is structured. And the reason I did it this way is for you to be able to see the textual similarities between them. Meaning, the first one of page 41, the first one of each round, Hashem says to Moshe, and it's Moshe is doing the Makkah, go in the morning to Paro at the river and warn him. Second one, page 42, there's Boel Paro, not by the river, just Boel Paro. The third one, page 43, there's no bowl parallel at all. It's just, go punish him. each of the first makot, you can see the print on page 41 is much smaller than page 42, and much, much smaller than page 43, right? Let's leave out for a second number 8 on page 42, which is an exception. We'll get to that soon. The reason why is because at the beginning of each round, page 41, Hashem speaks about the goals of the makos. To teach a lesson, bavur teda, so that you'll know, blah, blah, blah. Just in passing, I'll mention that I think each of these rounds are not coincidental. Each round has its own goal. The first round is the struggle / competition between God and human forms of magic and power. Because each of the first two makot, what does it say about the dam and the tzvardea? Hashem called chartumim, and they were able to do it. Third one, page 43, it says the Chartumim tried to make kinim, the lo yecholo, they were unable to. Pasuk Yedvav, v'yomru haChartumim el Paro, etz be'alokim hi. How do they know it's etz be'alokim? We can't do it. This is clearly not magic. This is you know, beyond us. The second round comes to an even greater chiddush, because if you look at the end of the second round, page 43, number 6. The same v'lo yachlu appears, but in a very different context. Not just the chartumim couldn't replicate it, but pasuk yud aleph, the chartumim couldn't even protect themselves from it. This is a much higher level, perek tet, pasuk yud aleph, of bringing them down on their knees. They can't even defend themselves from the overwhelming power of God. The third round, which begins with Barod, page 41, perek tet, pasuk yud gimel, number 7, Hashem talks about how now I'm being sholech at kol magefotai. And each of these makot talk about how it's going to be beyond anything the world has ever seen. Because, you know, there have been plagues like this, but this is going to be, you know, accentuated beyond. We talk about how these plagues were that way. Now, the strange thing in light of all this is that Parshat Bo begins with what makot? Arba. Which is in the middle of the third round. So if you're already going to break it up, I would have broken it up before Barad. Or in other words, the question I'm asking is, what new thing, what new parasha is beginning with Arba? Good gosh, you know, George. I think it's good gosh. What do you think? Good. Okay. May it be noted that Fish and Avigdor think it's a good gosh. Okay. It's not as big a gosh as the one we're talking about in Parsha Feira. I mean, that's a really wacky, but this is still pretty good. Yeah, it's still pretty good, right? Okay. Yaakov's consent also. Okay. So I'll tell you what I think the answer is. The beginning of Parshat Bo, much different than any of the other makot that are not the beginning of a round, and that's why, take a look at the print of makot number 8 on page 42. It's not the print is not important, it's the it's the amount of words which forces the small print. Look at makot 2, 5, 3, 6, and 9. All the other makot that are not the first one of a round. Look how many psikim you have, look how many words you have. Now, look at 8. Perik Yud, Pasuk Aleph through Chaf, 20 psukim, describe Makat Arba. That's a lot for a second Makkah. This Makkah is obviously more than just a regular standard second Makkah. By the way, if you look back at in the first run of each round, Makatam, 12 psukim. Makat Arov, 14 psukim. The only makat that has a longer presentation than Arba is Barad. We haven't explained yet. Okay, so okay, what is it? I'm just trying to start with the quantity. So let's take a look at the beginning of Parshat Bo. Let's take a look at the beginning of Parshat Bo. And try and understand what's the chiddush of Makat Arba. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Bo el Paro, ki ani echbadati eti bo bet lev avadav laman shiti ototai el bekirbo. Hashem is again talking about the goal of the Makot. I have hardened his heart so that I can do these miracles. What's the goal of these miracles? The Mitzriim already know that God is God. They're begging Paro to let the Jews go. Power are being artificially held back by God. Pasuk Beis. Uleman tisaper v'yaznei v'ncha uven b'ncha et asher et alalti b'mitzrayim. V'yet ototai asher samti vam. V'idatem ki ani Hashem.
The Jews are back.
The Jews are back. That's Parshat Bo. Here Hashem tells Moshe, and again it's very implicit, because the Torah doesn't want to say the Jews didn't believe, and that's why Mitzrayim got bogged down. You understand why the Torah doesn't want to say that. This is the high point of Jewish history and our relationship with God. We don't want to point out that the Jews weren't ready. Although if you look in Yecheskel Perek Chaf, when he's criticizing the Jews for not being faithful in those days, he goes, it's the same thing like when you were in Mitzrayim. There he talks about it. And God said, come, let me take you out, just have faith, and you weren't ready. So, you know, we have that textual basis for this also. But I think it's very clear here, if you're reading carefully, here he's saying, Uleman tesaper, you're going to tell over the way I, Morty, messed with Mitzrayim. I think that's a fair translation for the word hitalalti. I think a more exact translation is played, toyed with Mitzrayim. The way I toyed with Mitzrayim. Messed is fair too, you know, in the colloquial sense of the word, right? Vet ototai asher samtivam. Vidatem keni Hashem. You're going to know. The Makot openly have this as the goal, and unfortunately sometimes it's only when the goyim around us believe in something that Jews can believe in themselves, right? That can themselves believe in themselves. Only once the Egyptians are convinced, Hashem has to keep holding power out until the Jewish people are ready to act. And of course, we're not going to have time to do the whole parsha in depth, but of course, we have to make a behavior too. Of course, what do the Jews need to do in order for Makot Bechoros to take place? They have to do Karban Pesach, which is more than just a paint job, right? Right, we know the danger and the faith that need to be shown, and the only way the Jews are going to be able to leave Mitzrayim is if that's going to happen. Yes.
Do you know there's reports to show whether Korban Pesach is part of this backup plan, or the Korban Pesach would have happened all along?
We have no reason, I think, to believe that it was not part of the plan all along. And the reason it couldn't happen right away is because the Jews weren't at a stage where they could do Korban Pesach, where they were ready to. By the way, I want to hear something interesting. According to Chazal, even after all of this, not all the Jews were ready. Because Chazal claimed that only 20% left. And that the other 80% were knocked off during Choshech to avoid the embarrassment of Bechoros, right? Yes?
Yeah, so I just want to ask that. I mean, if Hashem wanted the whole point of Karban Pesach to see who was ready or not, why did he kill him before? Why didn't he...
Because he knew, that's what I just said, saying right now. Chazal said the reason he killed him in Choshech is because he didn't want them to die during Bechoros, because it would blur the line between the Jews and the Egyptians.
What do you mean? But Hashem couldn't, like, I don't know, make them all Google to come up, and I'm like, I don't know.
It's, I guess that's an alternative option. Yes.
Why do you need Barad?
Why do we need Barad?
You're already ready by Barad. Why don't we just have Choshech needed to kill off the people who didn't believe in him?
It's very hard to answer the questions in that exact format because the Torah doesn't explain it. We can speculate. I'm happy to speculate with you if you'd like. So I guess the Jews weren't ready yet.
Didn't we see they were ready before?
I don't know. You tell me.
You have to find the long introduction.
Look for both.
Arba is the long introduction.
Arba. Why do we need Arba? Why can't you just go to Choshech? Like,
maybe the Jews needed Arba and Choshech.
Maybe.
The dark time in Jewish history. Okay, so there's a lot more to say about Parshat Bo, but at least we came full circle and seeing the whole picture. And you know, maybe I'll give you the overview instead of going through all the details. At least you can, and then you can study yourself. Because if you note, pages 45, 46, 47, 48, there's a lot of pages. Are you with me? And I'll just give you the big picture. I'll give you the big picture. I'm trying to figure out how to fit this in. The big picture. The big, big picture. Oh, there's so much good stuff to say here. The big picture. I guess the best way we'll do is the Jewish way. A couple of questions, okay? So let's go over the parsha. We have here in Perek Yud, we have Makat Arba, right? And then we have Makat Choshech. Correct? And I want to show you something interesting, which I don't know if anyone has ever noticed at the end of Perek Yud. Of course, the famous question is, why were there 10 Makos? So one answer is, who are we celebrating?
One of these South American guys, I think, is getting married.
Congratulations. Shoyak, want to close the door? But don't touch the Mishnah Berurah.
It's closed.
It's closed. Did you touch the Mishnah Berurah?
No.
It seems like someone took them before I could touch them. Bummer. I think it's fading. It's fading, right?
What's the ticket? They touched it. It's
just like a sudden drop.
It's dancing down to somewhere.
Let me get back to the point. The famous question is, why were the 10 makos? So some say, well, you know, 10 is magic, and it's meant to be 10, and it had to be 10, and it needed to be 10, and blah, blah, blah. Of course, the answer we just gave, one could conceivably say, is when the Jews were ready. Another possible answer is to see what happened after the 9th one. Because, of course, the 10th one is a separate one. The Tzach, Adash, Ba'ach, Bechorath is totally out of the loop. Meant to be from the beginning, happens at the end, right? Okay. And very different than the others, and of course, Bechorath is different. We have mitzvah to commemorate Bechorath. Do we have any mitzvah to commemorate Arba, Choshech, Barod? Why do we have mitzvah to commemorate Bechorah? Because Bechorah was more than just a makah. It's a makah that was meant to express
the
well, they're all mightyful, but the relationship between the Jewish people and God. Right? B'ni Bechor Yisrael. And that's why God is koneh the Bechoros through makas Bechoros, right? Kili Bechor, right? And that's why you have to be part of the Bechor, etc. And getting back to the point, the end of the 9th Makkah, which is the last one before getting back to Bechoros, the end of Perek Yud, Paro ups the ante with Moshe. He raises the tension bar one level higher by doing what? He tells him, banishes him, you can never come in front of me again. Next time I see you, I'm going to kill you. That's much more than saying, you know, I hate you. And one could conceivably say, and I think it's a fair inference, that as long as Paro gave an audience to Moshe Rabbeinu, there's still some hope of him listening. Even though God is hardening his heart. When does God lower the hatchet on Paro? When he cuts off the possibility of hearing the one who is going to give him the Musar. It's very, you know, it's a very important thing, right? When we close ourselves off, that's when the final blow comes. And of course, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Hashem says to Moshe, Od nego echad avi al Paro. We're ready for the last Makkah. And Hashem never tells him here what the Makkah is going to be. And as the Ibn Ezra explains on page 45, top source, second Ibn Ezra, the first one just explains, Tisaper means the Jewish people will tell over. The second one says, Umatai Nemerlo, how did Moshe know that the Makkah was Bechoros? This is Nemerlo B'midjonod. He was told it in Perek Dalet in the end of Parashat Shemot. Moshe knew what was coming. So when Hashem said, we're up to the last one, Moshe now knew it was going to be Makkah Bechoros, because Hashem had already told him about it, right? So now Moshe gives the whole speech to Paro about how it's going to happen, Makas Bechoros, we're all ready. By the way, I don't know if anyone's ever noticed, I mean, we try not to notice anything when we're reading the psukim. The last two psukim in Perek Yud Aleph are very strange. Let's take a look. It says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Lo yishma lechem Paro, leman revot moftai be'eretz Mitzrayim. I'll translate it first literally simply, and then we'll see why it's a problem. Hashem said to Moshe, Paro won't listen to you, so I can do a lot of nisim. Hashem's telling that to Moshe now? This is after he did a lot of nisim. How do you understand this pasuk? This is a retrospective summary. Hashem had told Moshe that Paro won't listen to him, so he can do all these nisim. Pasuk Yud. Moshe and Aaron indeed had now done all these nisim, and Hashem had strengthened his heart, and Paro didn't send out the Jews. This is the summary, the conclusion, the bookend of the Makot. The Makot go from Perek Zayin to Perek Yud Aleph. There's an introduction where Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron, Paro's not going to listen to you, so we can do all these makos. Then we hear all these makos. Now it says, Hashem had told him, Paro won't listen to you, so you can do all these makos. He did all these makos. Summary. By the way, I kind of mentioned something incorrect in passing, just to, you know, what's the term I'm looking for? I was being in generalization. Perek Zayin is not the beginning of the makos. Because Perek Zayin begins with something before Dam. What happens before Dam? Look back if you don't remember. Tanin.
Yeah.
Right? You throw the stick down and it's going to turn into a tanin. Right? Now, that is not counted as one of the makos. Right? You know the makos. Dam, Tzvardei, Akinim, or where's tanin? Now, why is it not counted as a mako?
Didn't do anything.
Didn't hurt anybody. And that's why Hashem didn't use the word maka. But the other things he says, you know, mock it with the stick, mock it with the hand. He didn't say you're going to mock it with the stick. It's not meant to cause pain. Cyrilli said correctly, it is included though under the rubric of ototai umoftai, right? Of my signs and my magic. Well, the broader categorization for a second. Now the truth is, if you want to be correct, there are 10 otot. Tanin, dam, tzvardea, kinim, arav, devar, shchin, tzvuchoshech. Bechorot is separate. 9 of them are makot. Now it makes sense. Before you punish someone, first you bring a sign and you hope that he'll learn from that, right? When you don't learn, well, a shot already threatens a little bit painful, right? You know, you do something cool and you say, oh man, you should listen to me. You don't want to listen? Okay, now I'll stop beating you up, right? I guess it's somewhat parallel to a warning shot, but it doesn't even have that implicit punishment in it, right? By the way, just in passing, everyone always translates Arov as
wild animals.
But it's strange because when it says Arov, what does it say the Arov did? They did damage in Mitzrayim. They shchitu et kol eretz Mitzrayim. Wild animals usually do more than cause damage to property. I mean, if it's lions and tigers and bears up my, you'd be expecting, you know, casualties. There are some who say the word Arov means a multitude, a mixture, right? There's some who say it was like destructive insects.
And wouldn't that just be like
Arvis? Came and ripped up the place. Arvis crops. Arvis crops, locusts, it's a different thing. I mean, destructive insects, you know? They rip apart the curtains and, you know, rip on the floors, termites, all kinds of, you know, decimating insects. Anyway, just interesting for the record. So now we get up to Perikid Beis, and now all of a sudden, and this should be surprising for us, we're all ready for what after Perikid Aleph? We're all ready for Makad Bechorot. Instead, what do we get? A whole long tzivui about Korban Pesach. The truth is, I'm not going to do justice to the next couple of prukim, so we're going to stop now because we're already over time, you know, over the limit time wise. Remind me next week. Wait. Not going to be here next week. You guys want to make it up one day in the break? Break!
Yes.
Break. No, during the break. It's us, sir. How about Sunday? Sunday? Bob Shalach? This Sunday.
This Sunday.
Who can make it this Sunday at?
For the show of here.
What time? 2 o'clock?
3 o'clock is the show of.
How about 2 o'clock? 2:15. Yeah. Right before. Who can make it 2:15? Jordan, you can't make it 2:15? 2:20? Vart? 2:20. I don't want to go into the show of them. I don't want to give a little break also. So 2:15. Someone should remind me Sunday. I'll just send out a text. Remind me to everyone that we're making up. We'll do Boba Shalach. I'm happy to remember because I'm fair. I would be angry. Giving us a fair due. Say so. Remind me. Shayak, if you remind me, then I'll put a little reminder in the phone.
The point I think I've got this talking about like being girls or something.
See, so you don't want to miss it. You're saying. You heard the word girls, you want to be there. I understand.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what my grandfather told me when I started teaching. He goes, I'll give you one good tip. Just teach the dirty parts. None of the rest of the Torah. He goes, the rest of the one thing.